This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the renowned website builder that helps you share your story with the world in the most beautiful way. Establish a personal brand, portfolio, or e-commerce store at squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Hello and welcome to Tech Weekly. I'm Alex Krotowski, and this week we are putting on our headsets and diving into the world of virtual and augmented reality.
This is Microsoft HoloLens. What if we could go beyond the screen? Where your digital world is blended with your real world. Now we can. This is the world with holograms.
Yes, this week we caught a glimpse of Microsoft's answer to the Oculus Rift virtual reality headset, the slickly designed augmented reality headset, the HoloLens. Also this week, Facebook's virtual reality film arm, Story Studio, launched its first movie for the Oculus Rift, Lost. So what better time to take a step back, try not to fall over or vomit, and look at this emerging technology. This is an augmented edition of Tech Weekly from The Guardian. Joining me to discuss VR and AR, which is far easier to say, I have Guardian Technology Writers Alex Hearn.
Hello.
Good. That's what it says in the script. It says say hello. And Samuel Gibbs over there.
Hello.
Oh, honestly, every time I come in here, I love to see your face to so many things that are just not conveyed by the audio platform. Also joining us down the line, we have Guardian Games Editor Keith Stewart.
Hello.
Oh, that's brilliant. And in studio, let's make it, you know, we're batting 1,000. We have the pleasure of having Dan Page, resident VR evangelist at Opposable Games. A warm welcome to you, Dan.
Hello.
Brilliant. Right. Now that we've all said our hellos. First of all, I want to throw this out because I understand that amongst those who truly know and understand the depths of these technologies, there is actually a difference between VR and AR. Dan, why don't you lead with this? What is the difference between the two?
Sure. So augmented reality tends to involve, or as a rule, I'd say actually, it will involve the real world with, you know, augmented aspects of it. It'll have various different, I don't know, graphical displays, or it'll have something along the lines of 3D models that are actually somehow shown on a display of some sort, be it a HMD like the HoloLens, or it be on an iPad through a camera, and basically they're layered upon reality as you see it.
And usually you have to have some kind of headgear for that.
Well,
some kind of eyewear.
The headgear is actually quite a sort of new thing, other than the Google Glass. You know, Magic Leap are trying to do something with headgear, as well as Microsoft and the Cast AR as well. But, you know, a lot of the time, really, in the past, augmented reality has tended to involve smartphones or tablets, really.
So I would take my smartphone.
Sure.
And I would shine it over, or not shine it, but, you know, I would point it over a thing, mm-hmm. and that thing would then have, you know, the holodeck from Star Trek.
Absolutely. Appear. I mean, it's been used quite a lot in, say, a magazine, and you wanted to have an advert for some products, and you have a little QR code on there, and then basically that'll see where that QR code is and display a sort of 3D object on that might promote the product in the magazine or something like that. And it's also been used to, say, in engineering, if you were kind of, it will recognize geometry sometimes if you implement something like that. And then you can actually just look at a whole room and it'll see exactly where things should be and perhaps convey some extra information about that location.
That would be quite useful for, you know, things like redecorating and stuff.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
So you don't have to shove the sofa around. Mm-hmm. Quite clever. So yeah. That's augmented reality. Sam, tell me about virtual reality.
Virtual reality is kind of, it's a similar concept to AR, but VR is taking you your whole perception directly into a completely virtual world. There's no representation of the real world in it. It's meant to take you almost on an out-of-body experience, I suppose you could call it. So you are transported into a completely artificial world. Now, of course, that could resemble the real world, but it is an artifice within the goggles. And this is where virtual reality does need a set of headgear, because you can't create the effect without it. And so that's why. So, for instance, the Oculus Rift is essentially two screens in front of your eyes that together create a stereoscopic vision for you, and they create a virtual world within it. And you know, it tracks your head movements, and so what your eyes see and what your body does is mirrored. So, you know, as you turn, the vision turns, and you can have a seamless experience within itself.
Virtual reality, in particular, is not a new idea. Those were the things that we all sort of tried on in the early 90s or earlier and felt sick or were desperately disappointed by.
I seem to remember the 3D treadmills that you could walk in any direction and that kind of,
and stumble over dogs and grannies and all that kind of thing. But Oculus Rift is the new hotness when it comes to virtual reality.
It very much was made so when Facebook paid ungodly sums for it, yes. I mean, it's basically held as the second coming of VR. Whether that's true or not, others are working in the VR space, but it is one of the first companies to create something tangible that we can stick on our faces and actually works, delivers on a promise of creating a virtual world that A, doesn't make you sick when you move around, and B, gives a platform for somebody to develop on.
I've tried a friend's Oculus Rift, and he I think it was an action adventure game where there was something that I could do. I found it, Alex, incredibly intimidating and sort of immersive to the degree that, you know, if one is inclined to panic, then one might panic.
Yeah, and it's really interesting looking at the stumbling blocks that the early developers for Oculus have hit on. I'm sure Dan will be able to tell us more in a bit, but it's more than initially developers kind of thought that the thing about developing for an Oculus Rift is that basically it's like developing any other video game, but the camera is attached to the player's head and they move it around, so you can just load up your first person shooter engine and bring it right in. And then they very quickly realized that if you're doing something which inherently has an out-of-body experience and this element of being transported, that leads to some really difficult problems. The first of which is it feels just wrong if you as a character, as your in-world representation, aren't sitting down. If you're playing the game sitting down, but your character is supposedly standing up and walking, that's incredibly disorienting. So the first wave of games that we're seeing that are actually successful are things like Elite Dangerous and Eve Valkyrie. They're space simulators where you play someone sitting in the seat of a spaceship.
But is that also not the population who would have invested in Oculus?
Partially, like, but if you compare it to what's popular and successful in mainstream video games, it's first-person shooters all the way. If we were just looking for a one-to-one mapping, it would be first-person shooters. And there are a lot of people pumping a lot of money into FPS games who would be very happy to have a new platform. But it really just doesn't work that well. And then the next thing that started happening is people realized that even once you settle that, there are things that you might be comfortable doing in a video game which actually dialed up to the intensity that you have in virtual reality isn't really on. Jump scares are the big one, you know, simply just something coming at the screen. I can't play games like Silent Hill or even Resident Evil much because I'm
oh,
worse.
You laugh. Listen, I had panic attacks, right? Well, at least I had nightmares for weeks.
Jump scares are... They're bad on a TV screen. They're worse in a 3D film. On an Oculus Rift, they are actually unpleasantly terrifying. I'm sure there are some masochists who love them, but for me, if you put me in a scary Oculus Rift game and didn't warn me about jump scare, you would be... Well, you'd have a broken piece of kit lying on the floor after I ripped it off my head and threw it away. Dan, I mean, how have you found working through these stumbling blocks, learning the platform as you go?
Sure, so... And one of the things that tends to help, I mean, again, it lends itself well to the seated experience, is having a fixed point of reference, something in front of you that is always fixed. And that, for some reason, really enables your brain to get itself around the fact that you're actually, you know, in VR. And basically, you can quite often, after you get your VR legs, as they call it, for a while, you can tend to wander around sometimes in first-person games if it's slowed down significantly. So one of the stumbling blocks is kind of actually working out the pacing of games. Like, you know, if you tried the popular Half-Life 2 mod from Wormslayer or the actual one that Valve have been doing, it's just too fast. But when you slow it down a bit, you can cope with it. But then, of course, you know, the set pieces of the games are not meant for slow movement. So just trying to plug it into all the games sometimes work and sometimes not. It's about kind of thinking what will and what won't, you know.
From a step back even further than developing individual games and looking for these stumbling blocks. I mean, I remember people talking about the immersion of something like Dungeons and Dragons, and, you know, that we know what happened with popular culture with that. They instantly demonized it and proclaimed that it was causing, you know, some occult activity and all that kind of thing. Have you started to see anything like that? Have you heard anything about that with this type of virtual reality?
Have I seen any occult activity?
Have you stumbled across any, you know, burning pirate? No, but have you seen anything in your wanderings as a developer of some of the fear that might be coming?
I haven't yet. I think they're yet to catch on to it. I see it coming, definitely. I can't wait to see, you know, Fox News kind of get onto it and just generally kind of a lot of the reactionaries kind of press, they're going to go wild with it when they actually go, these kids that are seeing this and they believe they're there, it's disgraceful. And, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see what comes out of that. You know, there are times where I've kind of had a level of deja vu when I thought I was in VR again. I was in a nightclub the other week, and the lights had a bit of a red-green tinge to them, and it kind of reminded me of what you call the chromatic aberration that you get in there, because you can kind of see a little bit of red and green out the corner of your eye when you're in VR, and for a moment you're just like, whoa. And that's, you know, at this really low level of resolution that we're currently at. And I can see going forward, it is going to be a little strange sometimes.
That's I can imagine that people really playing with that in nightclubs.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? That could be a whole new aesthetic. So why have you decided, Dan, to develop for this platform? It's awfully new, but it's something that has tried and failed so many times. So why have you embraced Oculus Rift?
It's incredibly exciting, and, you know, personally, it's something that I've wanted to happen since I was a kid, and you know, once you try it, it's like, whoa, I get this now. And it is happening, and how cheap the components have become now is just a huge factor in the availability, you know, the availability that it brings along, and how it will be able to be taken to consumers eventually. That's the near future now, whereas, you know, it used to cost around, I don't know, $30,000 for a headset, as opposed to the, you know, £280 it is around now.
So, depending upon the exchange rate, obviously.
Yeah, obviously. But and I just think that's it. It's affordability, and it's the resolution that we've got now because of smartphones and the screens that are available. They're made of, you know, they're mass produced. So, and it's just incredible when you actually kind of think about the possibilities within it. And I mean, you know, we just kind of see a big future in it, and it seems like the next logical step. I was never really particularly convinced by 3D TV. It kind of always felt like 2.5D to me. I was actually kind of, when you try on a Rift, you're like, all right, yeah, here I am.
You're poured into that space.
Exactly, yeah. And the possibilities, you know, beyond gaming are incredible. I've had a lot of fun playing around with Rift Max Theater, which I don't know if you've heard of, but it's kind of like a multiplayer cinema app that's been developed by, I think, just one person. And you can just stream movies from YouTube or from wherever else, or whatever video you like, with a load of people. And you kind of share this space with various other avatars, and you're wandering around and you can talk to each other. And they even host podcasts in there.
Sounds like Mystery Science Theater 3000, actually. And again, I can imagine that the reactionary media would be like, what? They're going to the cinema, but they're not actually co-present. This is the demise of society, et cetera, et cetera.
You can see why Facebook wants a chunk of that, can't you?
Absolutely.
Quite. Well, actually, I'm going to throw this one to you, Sam, because before we started recording, we were talking about the fact that this is not a new phenomenon. Why do you think it is taking off now?
Well, as Dan said, I think it's the affordability factor. Like, smartphones. So at the moment, we're going through a revolution in wearable technology as well. If you take one step back from Oculus and you look at Google's Cardboard, for instance, that is essentially a pair of VR goggles made out of a smartphone. You slap the smartphone in front of two lenses and you black out the rest, and jobs are good, and you've now got a pretty decent VR experience.
It sounds a bit like a kind of a Blue Peter style project.
It very much is. It's genuinely made out of cardboard. I mean, you know, it is.
Do they use blue tack as well?
Sticky tape.
Sticky tape, so important.
It's one of those fantastic sort of quirks of history, because, like, so VR technology now, really has reached the stage where it can be popularized by people like Oculus and Palmer Luckey, and become, if not mass market, something that's viable for developers to tool around with, because it's almost entirely a side benefit of smartphone technology. These very high resolution, very fast refresh rate screens, which are developed for the insane behemoth that Sam carries around, the latest Nexus phone. Gyroscopes.
It's about the size of this studio, isn't it?
Well, you know.
You can eat your breakfast off it.
Yeah, definitely. Gyroscopes
and accelerometers, again, are something which were, I mean, they weren't niche technology, but until they were chucked in smartphones, built at massive scale, so the price went down, and again, repeatedly iterated, they weren't anywhere close to the accuracy that you need to have good head tracking. But the weird thing is, you go back to 2007 and the launch of the iPhone and the beginning of the modern smartphone era, and obviously, yeah, a screen, that's something which was always going to be in any modern smartphone. It's not hard to imagine a world where an accelerometer never made it into smartphones. That is not a necessary piece of technology. If the iPhone hadn't had that weird landscape orientation, the thing where you can hold it sideways to get a landscape screen, then accelerometers probably wouldn't have been in the iPhone. They wouldn't have been the next smartphones. They would not have gained this economy of scale. And I genuinely wonder if that slight quirk of design, if that hadn't happened, whether we'd have this VR technology we have now.
This new year, make a resolution to dust off that big idea. This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the powerful platform that gives you simple tools to create a gorgeous website in minutes. With elegant templates, Getty image integration, and marketing tools, you can make your ideas resonate with the world. Try it at squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
VR has always been a niche audience to engage with VR. We've talked about some of the reasons why it might break out this time around. But mixed reality, the notion of augmented reality, what you were talking about before, Dan, using your smartphone to see things coming out of QR codes, using it to sort of look around a space and have bits of information come out about that space, has always, I don't know if it's the killer apps, if it's the applications, but it's always seemed to me to be that thing that would be adopted faster than virtual reality. So why have you not decided to engage with mixed reality rather than virtual reality?
We actually do. We are actually working on a few augmented reality things. We've kind of did a little game jam, internal sort of game jam with McDonald's to create something for them a little while ago. And we're working with an engineering firm to create something that does work for basically communicating information that's stored about buildings within a database. So we are actually working with that already. And, you know, there's a lot of game technology that we can use, reuse, basically, with apps like that. So I do actually see a lot of future in that. And I think it's almost like there's been a shorter cycle like there was with VR and it kind of failing and then trying again. But with augmented reality and virtual reality, I think since the kind of popularity of virtual reality, there's almost increased interest in AR. And it's kind of sparked a lot more interest in it recently. People seeing the use of it more, because it was, you know, it was quite a while ago. Well, you know, it was a couple of years ago, really, that AR did come around, and it did kind of flop and die. And obviously, people weren't convinced by the Google Glass, but that was essentially not a great product when it came out.
Was it just simply that people didn't know about it? Because we do operate within a bubble of people who know about this kind of stuff ahead of other people. And Google Glass managed to kind of creep out, but it was more for the bad reasons as opposed to, hey, this might provide you with something new and different. Is it, Sam, that AR has just suddenly started to hit that critical mass?
I mean, I think it's because, you know, when we first saw AR, we were thinking of like Terminator vision. When I saw Terminator, I thought, yes, I want that. I want a label over the top of him.
Or, you know, I swear, Sam.
Well, it's got nothing to do with killing things, but information right at my, you know. But then when AR popped up on, say, like Blipr is one of the good examples. They were a company that basically created augmented reality experiences based on adverts. So you point your phone at an advert, up pops an animated character or something like that. You know, it was very impressive technology, but for the consumer, what's the benefit? I don't really see any benefit with that. See more ads? Great, thanks. But now we've started getting to the point where, you're right, the VR kind of motion brought along with it, it came at the same time as the headgear for smart glasses, effectively. You know, they were first in prototype. They've been in prototype for a long time, and then they started becoming almost a real proposition. Now, Google Glass was one of the first commercially available. Was it fantastic? I don't know. It did a lot for smart glasses. It propelled it into the mainstream consciousness. Oh, actually, you can have a pair of smart glasses. And this kind of holographic display technology has really put it into the realm of possibility. Microsoft HoloLens, it's using technology that Microsoft's developed in a system called Kinect and bolting it onto your face. I think it might be its potential. Well, what did you think of HoloLens?
Yeah, I'm hoping it's going to be good. I really, really want it to be good. And the ideas of it are very, very promising. The marketing looks fantastic. Again, it's often hard to say when you're just looking at, you know, marketing, basically, isn't it? But I think, you know, it seems to have actually caused quite a stir, and people seem to be excited about it way more than people seem to be for Google Glass. And I think it's partly because they've talked about gaming right away, and people are seeing it. And like they bought Minecraft, and then suddenly gone, boom, there's Minecraft in your living room. And of course that's going to be inspiring. I think there's a lot of potential for it, definitely.
So Keith, do you see from the types of things that you cover a battle between AR and VR, or do you see them as industries that will quite happily thrive regardless of one another?
Yeah, I think it's very natural within our industry to look for platform wars. You know, that is kind of the way that we receive technology as consumers. We like to think there's going to be a battle and there'll be a winner, and that'll help us make our decision about where our money goes. I think that's been the case since Betamax versus VHS. But I think there are definitely, you know, as everyone's been saying, they offer very different experiences. One is about augmenting your real world and inviting the game into your world. One is about the game inviting you into its world. So they're kind of almost opposites in sort of a psychological and spatial sense. So I almost don't think there's going to be a battle. In fact, I'm kind of glad that Microsoft has gone down the augmented reality approach, because it means that we're not just going to get, because obviously you know that Sony has its Project Morpheus virtual reality headset for PlayStation 4, and it looks like HoloLens will be a standalone device, but also will have compatibility with Xbox One. So I'm kind of glad that we may have one console with AR and one console with VR. I think that makes sense, and I think we're going to see very, very different types of experiences on both of them. AR is kind of naturally maybe perhaps more inclusive, in that you could have maybe four people in your room, all with AR headsets or capabilities, who could share an experience together within that environment, and it's very, very easily understandable. Like lots of people, when they're talking about AR, and Dan was very kind and helped me gather up lots of VR experts last week, and I asked them all what they think is going to happen with HoloLens, and they all said, lots of them said, well, we can imagine kind of board games where you have like your coffee table and projected onto this, in that kind of classic Star Wars chess game style, and lots of animated pieces that do battle. You know, imagine playing a strategy game with your friend, and all this, you know, the massive armies congregate on your sofa, then attack across your living room rug. It's a very kind of seductive idea, whereas VR I see as being much more kind of insular and immersive. You know, I think it was Alex or Sam who was saying they were too scared to play with jump scares.
It was Alex.
Definitely Alex.
That's definitely what's happening. If you look at Alien Isolation, famously ran a demo both Gamescom and E3 last year, which is Alien Isolation is the new Alien game. And they had an Oculus Rift running there, and they had the game demoing. And one person played Alien Isolation on the Oculus Rift and was so terrified when the alien jumped down in front of them that they literally ripped the Oculus Rift off their heads and ran out of the room. And that's not even...
You laugh. Seriously. Yeah, I would have nightmares
was there
for weeks.
I saw it happen. It's not an exaggeration.
Well, so. Alex, actually, I wanted to come to you now, because not only were you sort of shaking your head and waggling your hand, kind of, come see, come sa, mano a mano. Sorry, I'm just throwing in all of the international languages that I know for this particular hand-wavy movement. But you, in addition to this idea of, you know, Fox News or other more reactionary media responding to the idea of, you know, we'll all get together and we'll play board games on our carpet, but in separate places. Mm-hmm. I think that's what you were responding to. But in your opinion, which of these do you think would have legs beyond the gaming world?
So,
and is that important?
Yeah, I think whether they have legs beyond the gaming world won't ultimately be what determines their success. I think for both of these technologies, games are going to be the thing that gets them into houses, that gets people actually spending the still hundreds of pounds required to purchase them.
And not porn.
I don't think so, no. Partially because, you know, you've got to have some way of explaining why you have an Oculus Rift in your house. And
gaming.
Exactly. The success of games makes that more plausible than something which, you know, is well known for porn, but which... Yeah, how do you explain that?
We don't need to go there.
But no, I mean, if we're using the age-old tech maxim that porn adoption drives the adoption of technology, in that case, it's a hands-down win for the Oculus. That is, you know, an intensely private experience where you can be looking at anything and no one can tell what it is because it's one-on-one. Whereas the HoloLens, you know, AR as a theory, as a concept, could obviously eventually create amazing porn by bringing beautiful people into your house and actually making it look like they're there. But right now, it's nowhere near that. And also, I'm now discussing sex tech, which I really didn't mean to.
I'm so sorry.
I interjected to talk about board games, Alex.
It's a fine line. I would argue that board games probably don't. Well, frankly, I don't know if they do have a porn. Moving on from porn, because we seem to have dragged ourselves into the muck and the mire. Dan, moving away from the muck for a second. Google has graduated its glass from, I believe, Sam, from a kind of a moonshot project to something that is actually going to go into...
In theory,
into sort of major production. But as you say, it's in theory. Many people have read the headlines about Google giving it a little diploma and saying, thank you very much, on your way, mm-hmm. as, you know, saying, thank you very much, here's your pink slip. What does that say for the alternate reality?
Well, there's
augmented reality. Excuse me. God, there's so many different acronyms. The augmented reality community, if the kind of the harbinger of greatness sort of has gone away.
I think Google have quite the history of retiring their products, and I don't think that should actually affect what most other people are doing with theirs, and I don't think it will particularly. And I'm sure, you know, the HoloLens will become, well, I hope the HoloLens will become successful, and there is Cast AR, and there's Magic Leap as well. And, you know, Google have led investment into Magic Leap. So I see there's definitely a future in it. And if they do come out with Google Glass 2.0 and it's, you know, all singing, all dancing, then so be it. So I really don't see it as actually affecting the industry in the short term, because I don't think that many people bought the Google Glass anyway, really.
Keith, what are your interpretations of how something like the Glass, because the Glass was never really intended to be a gaming platform, was it? It was... So this isn't really going to have much of an impact, is it, on the community that's developing for AR or VR?
No, I mean, I think all that Google Glass shows is you cannot look like an idiot on the street and kind of get away with it. And there were so many concerns around the invasiveness of augmented reality in the form of Google Glass, that it just kind of rendered it almost unusable from a kind of social acceptability standpoint. But I don't think that's going to be a barrier to augmented reality working, even in the context of a street. I think either it's got to be kind of blatant and attached. You know, augmented reality games have been around on smartphones for many years. Nokia had a great one, well, a fun one called Mosquitoes, which kind of transplanted mosquitoes onto your phone screen, so you could wave your camera around and you could see mosquitoes coming at you. So, anything can be an augmented, anything that has a camera can be an augmented reality platform, and those things are more obvious and people feel safer with them. Google Glass was this kind of weird, almost anti-Trojan horse in the, it was the absolute opposite of that. So I think maybe if it is going to be kind of wearable, then it's going to have to look like normal glasses. It's going to have to look like something which isn't easily identifiable, but that brings with it, again, lots of moral and social concerns. But I think Google Glass is a really interesting lesson to the whole industry in what happens when you take kind of geek culture out of the kind of nerd living room or bedroom and into the real world.
Did you hear about the person that got attacked in like a McDonald's or something when he was wearing a Google Glass?
There's a lot of a lot of stories of people getting attacked.
Yeah, and it was kind
video.
It was a sort of Deus Ex sort of storyline. I don't know if anybody played the Deus Ex games. Yeah. You suddenly like kill the cyborgs. Like no, yeah. So I mean, there's that factor as well. Maybe we'll have some kind of anti-cyborg uprising.
I can see it. I can see a film. Speaking of film, and that was not a segue, but speaking of film, perhaps the way to get over this dork factor is for a whole room of people to watch a movie with one. And this week, Story Studios, which is the Oculus Rift virtual reality arm of Facebook, unsurprisingly, they have one because they have so much money, they can do anything. They launched their first film. They premiered their first film at Sundance. So is that the way that we're going to get people to wear oculi?
It could well be. I mean, maybe that's what will drive people to. People were prepared to put the kind of dorky looking 3D glasses on for some movies. But, you know, at the same time, I'm scared that people will be, you know, will again still have the same thing and not like, want to do it. And maybe the 4D effects will convince people. Maybe they won't. I don't know. I mean, I'd very much like to think so. But again, I think it's a way off now. And I think it's going to have to be some really forward thinking entrepreneurs that actually kind of make this happen. And at the moment, 360 degree filming has quite a lot of things to overcome, like kind of making it 3D and making it seamless, because it's essentially just a series of cameras stitched together at the moment. And quite often you'd be looking around and you can see the stitches within those movies, and the 3D can look a little off. And I think the 2D content works a lot better really at the moment. But I think, you know, and I do see a definite future in the 360 movie making industry, but there's so much to overcome. And again, it's going back to basics and rethinking the way that you have to, that you tell a story again, which is similar to having to go back to square one with game making. You can't do it in exactly the same way that you always have done before. You know, you might be looking at the birds on a rooftop over there and miss a massive punch up or a really important action scene and have to go and rewatch the whole thing again. It's interesting that Oculus have taken the made the decision to vary the length of their movie by actually having points in where you have to look around and something has to happen. You cause the next scene to begin.
Oh, okay. So it's quite game-like.
In a way, yeah, but it's non-interactive other than the gaze. So, I mean, that's why, that clearly to me is why they've gone the CG route and they've hired someone from Pixar rather than actually trying to do something that's just a movie. They've got so much more control over what's going on, and you can, you know, there's some clever guys in America that are thinking about kind of dimming the edges of an area if you look too far from one way, and that's going to be a lot harder to implement with film.
So Sam, this raises an interesting issue when it comes to the user interface. If we are using holograms as user interface, whether it's an AR or using VR for user interface, the gaze, as you say, what does that imply for how we then interact with the world?
So if you think about it, it opens up limitless possibilities. I mean, at the moment we're tied to screens. Everything has a screen, and you can only really interact with it if it has a screen or buttons, you know what I mean? But when you remove that necessary step, for instance, look at Minority Report. I mean, we're talking kind of this visualization of an interface that is tied to hands, there's a virtual screen, you know, and you can do whatever you like with it. Now, there's a set of gloves out there already that are watched by a camera and effectively do the kind of, I'm twisting my hands as if you can see it, but anyway, the pinch and zooms and things like that, and twists and things like that, with the hands in a 3D space, they can already be tracked and used as an interface. And once you have something across your gaze that basically projects a screen onto anything, or in fact not even onto anything, just floating in space, you then open up an interface paradigm that's just limitless. I mean, what are we going to do with it? It's going to be up to the developers, but also perhaps a bit of what you can be used to. So, like, I mean, I think the first things that are going to be is, say, for instance, everybody has a pair of smart glasses. The most effective means of data input is still a keyboard. So you might have a keyboard, but you might not have any screen. So you just look at the keyboard and the way you bash out on your thingy, and then the screen pops up in front of you. I mean, I think we're going to have several stages of that before we go to this kind of wow
Keith, Keith, what do you think that this kind of level of wow that Sam is referring to will do to our understanding of the world? This is a question that, you know, people who think about games think about a lot, because that was the next stage, wasn't it? The terrible word gamification, but how we interact with things, our relationship to storytelling. If this kind of technology is coming out of the gaming community specifically, what will it do to our level of understanding of the world?
I think it's interesting. I think it's going to have a lot of... I think philosophers are going to be very interested in how people deal with augmented reality going forward, because it does... It kind of begs lots of questions about what we're going to actually call reality in like 10, you know, maybe 5 to 10 years. I was speaking to a game developer, a friend of mine recently, and he was talking about his like 7 or 8 year old daughter, who expects every screen now to be a touch screen because she's so used to using the iPad. And for her, she's so immersed in games, she's such a digital native, that the reality around her, the physical reality, the one that we all call reality, is just one of a set of optional realities for her. She sees no difference between the reality around her and the reality that she submerges in virtual environments. And I think it is going to, you know, I think there's going to be lots of interesting ontological debates about how we see ourselves and what we term as reality. What both AR and VR represent is the kind of physicalization of ourselves within an environment. And I think that both of them are going to borrow actually very heavily from theatre. I think we're going to see, which I find is fascinating because that's a very ancient form. But Brendan Iribe of Oculus Rift, when he was talking about the film that they've made, said it's like when you're watching this film, it's like sitting on a stage with the actors and being able to look where you want. And I think that's very interesting. I think developers are going to maybe have to look to theatre. You know, theatre has had a convention for a number of years called Promenade Theatre, where the audience can come in and look around and be a part of the performance. Road by Jim Cartwright is a really good example. And I think that's interesting. I think a lot of games developers and technology developers are going to have to go to the theatre and see theatre productions to understand the conventions of how we experience that. I think that's really interesting. I think a lot of developers are going to have to go back about 400 years to work out how we're going to be immersed in these new worlds.
Sam?
At CES this year, I was in a panel of future worlds, and I was listening to the CEO of Jaunt VR, who's one of the producers of VR content from an experiences point of view. And he said, at the point at which we've cracked real-time streaming, so as in from their 3D cameras, which they're working on now, 3D, totally 3D, 3D 360-degree cameras, to your glasses at that point, and they can then stick it in a sports stadium, and then you can then watch sports from whatever angle you want. That's when they're really going to crack it. And it's a bit like the theatre point of view. You can look wherever you want. Sports doesn't necessarily have a key place you have to look at. You can be watching one player running across the field. You can be watching where the ball is. You can be watching the crowd, the manager, that kind of thing. And I think once they get into that point of view, that position,
literally that point of view,
it's going to be fantastic.
Well, that is all we have for you on this week's show. There's plenty more to discuss. We didn't even get into the commercial implications of this kind of interaction. But do remember to read all about cutting-edge augmented reality and virtual reality technologies. Head on over to the best technology site in the world. Other technology sites are, of course, available, but this one is theguardian.com/technology. A huge thank you to Dan Page. We will have a link to Dan's work at Opposable Games on the blog for this podcast. Thanks also to Keith Stewart down the line. Thank you, Keith. Samuel Gibbs and Alex Hearn here in the studio. We will be back next week with insight into our digital world. But for now, from me, Alex Krotowski, and our producer in the box, Jason Phipps, whoop whoop, thank you very much for listening. Bye.
For more great downloads, go to theguardian.com/audio.